we pick up with the letter F as we continue on through the alphabet of commonly confused words on the latest episode of You're Saying It Wrong. Also, a listener question that brings up something that at least one of us has never even thought about. Find You're Saying It Wrong at KMUW.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental or additional
to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
In her timely novel, The Five Wounds, Kirsten Valdez Quaid introduces readers to a family in a small New Mexican town. Beginning and ending in Holy Week, it spans a year in which 33-year-old Amadeo tries to redeem himself, his martyrish mother Yolanda hides an illness, and his 15-year-old daughter Angel becomes an unwed mother who outmatures all characters combined. I recently spoke with Kirsten Valdez Quaid about the novel and its origins. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Would you mind setting up the novel? When I describe novels, I tend to give everything away. So it's better coming from you.
Sure. So the novel began as a short story that was published in The New Yorker. And the story is set in the fictional New Mexico town of Las Penas. It opens during Holy Week, and Amadeo is an unemployed ne'er-do-well who is a part of a small community of penitentes. It's a lay Catholic group whose worship includes physical penance. And he has been chosen to play the role of Jesus in the Good Friday procession, and he thinks that the role will transform his life. He's thrown himself into it. But then all of his plans are disrupted when his teenage daughter, Angel, shows up on his doorstep unannounced and enormously pregnant. So the novel takes place over a year in the family's life as each of them sort of comes to understand what it means to be a parent and what it means to be a child and how they can heal old wounds. And I mean, I've always been really moved by the rituals of the penitentes, by this form of worship that includes physical penance, because it's always struck me as this really beautiful and empathetic way of engaging with the story of Christ's suffering and death and resurrection. And I was reading about penitentes in the 19th century, and in one of the books I was reading, there was an allusion to rumors that some people had been actually crucified. And, you know, these are not documented cases. These were really rumors. And, you know, I thought, gosh, what kind of need and depth of belief would be behind a choice like that? And that was where Amadeo came from.
So what are the five wounds?
Well, the five wounds originally are the five wounds that Christ suffered on the cross. So the two in the palms, two in the feet, and then the wound in the side. The five wounds in the book are really, you know, the wounds that the characters carry. And I guess depending on how you count, there could be more or less than five.
This started as a short story. How did it progress from the short story to this full-blown novel?
Well, really what happened, my editor had emailed and asked if I'd ever considered extending it into a novel. And I immediately said no, dismissed the idea, and kept writing short stories. And then a couple years later, I was looking at some drafts in progress, and I realized that these three drafts were sort of dealing with the same constellation of characters, the same family dynamics. And I thought, oh gosh, this is Amadeo and Angel and Yolanda. And I am clearly still very interested in these characters. And, you know, the question for me, at the end of the story, Amadeo does ask for the nails, and he is crucified, and he has this epiphany that's not actually the way to salvation, that the way to salvation and changing his life is in his relationship with the people around him, and it's through loving and caring for the people around him. And he sees his daughter and has this epiphany, and I thought, well, gosh, what happens the next morning? when he wakes up. I mean, will he be able to hang on to this epiphany? And I sort of suspected that for Amadeo, as with so many of us, you know, he might require more than one epiphany.
I was going to ask, and I want to ask more about Amadeo and Angel and Yolanda, but I have one more little short story question, because I was reading an interview that you gave, and it was about this short story being edited by Willing Davidson at The New Yorker, and you said he had cut it down by a third, and when you started to read his edited version, it was difficult to see what he had cut, because his cuts were so surgical and so smart, is what you had said. So then I thought, well, how does one go from the story that has been cut down by a third to this full-blown novel? And I guess I want to ask about the editing process, both of how that story was cut and if that had any influence then on the greater novel.
Well, I will say that, I mean, Willing Davidson's edits are just miraculous. He is so, so gifted. And I don't think I put anything back in when I extended it into a novel that he had cut. I think actually there was one joke that I put back in, but otherwise I kept his cuts. And, you know, one of the obstacles to extending the story into a novel was that in some ways the story, because it had, you know, appeared in The New Yorker and then it was in my collection and, you know, it was in the world, I'd gone over it so, so many times in revision. And so it felt permanent in this way that was really hard for me to get my head around. And it was only as I was writing the novel, it was only when I was able to break open the published version and take things out, take what I needed from it and pull it apart a little bit, that I was able to really move on with the novel. Yeah, the fact that it had been this sort of coherent whole was really an obstacle to the writing of it. And so, I mean, if you do go back and read the short story, yeah, I mean, there's like a whole character and a subplot that gets pulled out. And because it just wasn't part of the novel. It wasn't right for the energy and the arc of what the novel became. And so I think of the two as being, you know, sort of parallel realities, you know, two different ways that the story of these people's lives could have unfolded.
I find writers of short stories and the lives of these stories fascinating. And I know we're talking about a novel. I promise I'll get off the short story. But I was visiting with another author about his collection of short stories, and he says that every time the story appears, it's a different story, that the story is always changing. And I know, like, for a novel, once the novel is done, it's done, right? But do you find yourself editing your short stories wherever they appear? Are they never quite done?
Oh gosh, if I'm given the opportunity to edit, then absolutely. And in fact, when I give a public reading, I always have a pen in my hand, and I'm always sort of cutting out words or as I go, even though, you know, I'm never going to get the chance to edit these stories that were in the collection. You know, it's just for me, it's my own neurotic practice. But it is funny, you know, the story, The Five Wounds, was once performed by a theater troupe in the Bay Area called Word for Word. And so it was actors, these incredible actors, who perform the entire short story, and they do in fact read it word for word. I mean, they've memorized it, and they even the dialogue tags they read. And that was such an incredible experience to see my story, which again had lived inside me for so long, and I knew those sentences. I'd edited them, you know, hundreds of times and tweaked them. And, you know, so I knew the language, but then to see it interpreted by these actors was really an incredible and surreal experience, because I recognized the language, but it was a different story.
You know, this novel takes place over the course of a year, and it starts and ends in Holy Week? I'm reading this. I mean, I finished this during Holy Week, which it added another layer to my experience. I feel sorry for the people who are going to read this next week on, you know, Easter Tuesday, or, you know, people who might not understand the faith and might not understand this. Do you worry that people who aren't Catholic won't understand?
I would hope not. I would hope that, you know, the Catholicism is sort of in the atmosphere of the story, but that the story itself is the story of this family and the relationships among all of the characters and the ways in which these characters really struggle to change their lives and become the people that they want to be, or at least a little bit closer to the people they want to be. At one point, I believe the novel was scheduled to come out on Good Friday, and I sort of I didn't notice it for a long time, and then when I did, I thought, oh, that's really cool. But it actually hadn't occurred to me that it would or should come out then. I mean, over the last couple of years, we've talked about a bunch of different release dates. So I don't think a person, you know, needs to be Catholic or needs to even know the story of Christ's crucifixion and life. I don't think that is essential to the book. At least I hope it's not. I mean, my intention was always for it to be about the living people.
I wanted to talk about Yolanda said this. She said, sure, every family has its problems, but her family problems are uglier. Do you think there was some truth to her feeling?
Well, you know, I know my family, and I am an observer of families around me, but my sense is that every family struggles, that every family deals with difficulty. Every family has a history that in some way exerts pressure on people and shapes how all the members grow and how they interact with each other. You know, when Yolanda says that her family problems are uglier, I think that comes out of a deep shame about her family problems. And I think, you know, we can feel really ashamed of the struggles and the suffering and the difficulties that we have in our families. I think we often take our identities from our families, even if it means, you know, we shape our identities by reacting against our families in many cases. But I think in that moment, I was trying to get at this sense of shame when, of course, you know, difficulty is universal.
I also wanted to talk a little bit, though, about salvation, because Amadeo just needed all of those second and third and fourth chances. And I felt like so many of them were looking for this salvation. I guess maybe let's start with Angel and that school she was going to. I did not meet Angel before she was 15, but she seemed to be the most mature out of all of the characters to me, especially when she would take care of Yolanda. And I mean, she had her moments where she acted her age, but she just felt so much older than her actual age to me.
Well, I think, you know, from a very early age, she really had to carry her own weight in the household. She had to take care of herself. And I think she took seriously her role as being, you know, on a team with her mother, that it was the two of them. So I think from a very early age, she took on heavy responsibilities. And so she is mature for her age. I mean, she's also a kid who just needs her parents. But yeah, I mean, she has a baby right toward the beginning of the book, and she really takes that responsibility toward her child seriously. And she takes her work and her learning in the teen parent program really seriously because I think she feels the urgency of it. She feels she owes it to her son to, you know, learn about child development and to get her GED. So yeah, I think I would agree with you. She's certainly more mature than her father, who is this giant baby for a chunk of the book, at least.
You touched on a lot of heavy topics, the alcoholism and the drug addiction and overdosing. I just kind of want to ask about what it is to do that deep dive and to write about topics like that.
Well, you know, I think we are steeped in difficulty and suffering all the time. I mean, I just think about this last year and how much sickness and grief and pain and injustice that was faced by so many people across the world. I mean, it's the tsunami. You know, so I think we're always living that. And the question is, are we paying attention to that, or are we trying to ignore it in order to get by? You know, how do we metabolize all of the suffering that is all around us?
That was Kirsten Valdez-Quaid, author of the novel The Five Wounds, which was published by W.W. Norton. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.